September 29th, 2021, and the Vasa is continuing on, the Vasa period, and time keeps passing, so now we've come to another changeover for the two-week solitary retreats over the last 2 weeks. A few of the three monks and a novice have been on retreat for the last 2 weeks, and now we have three other monks and an Anagarika on retreat for this last two-week slot that's starting now, starting today. And time keeps passing. Things keep happening. Monk fell off a cliff today, but he's okay. But he got pretty banged up. So, finished up the tea time, walked into the monk's room, and there he was laying on the ground getting patched up by a bunch of monks. They were just finishing patching him up. And, what's going on? Fell off a cliff. Okay. So it's fortunate that when these things happen, it wasn't worse. So, but we don't know how long we have. Anything can happen anytime. So we certainly don't know when these things are going to happen. When there's going to be a car accident or a cliff fall or whatever, or a workshop accident, a tool accident. Or some people just drop dead for no apparent reason. And it just happens all the time. So good to ask ourselves from time to time, what do we want to be doing? So not putting off wholesome qualities off into the future, but just doing what we can now. What do we want to be doing? What do we really want to be doing in terms of developing skillful qualities, developing wholesome qualities? It could just end like just never know. And when these things happen, it might seem like a big tragedy, but it's just totally normal. Somebody mentioned a while back, having a human body is a dangerous proposition. Being born is a dangerous proposition. And I remember there was a monk who died, had a tragic accident, died at Pujumgam, and I was there at the time. And remember Lungpur Liam then coming to Wat Pananachat to support the Sangha and make sure we were okay. And I said, like, isn't this strange that something like this would happen? Isn't this unusual? And he said, this is the most ordinary thing in the world. Death is the most ordinary thing in the world. So it's more like taking that, it's like demystifying death. It's one of the things I really appreciate about Thailand and India as well. It's just everywhere. Birth, aging, sickness, and death is just in your face. Not trying to hide from it. The funerals in traditional rural Thailand, the charnel ground and the bodies being burned out in the open. It's ordinary, it's normal. So we look at these things and we see these things, and this is a very integral part of Buddhist practice. This is an integral part of body contemplation, of kayagatasati, mindfulness of the body. The charnel ground contemplations are part of mindfulness of the body. And when we do the charnel ground contemplation, when we imagine or see in reality, in person, a corpse being burned, then we think, I too am of that nature. I too am not exempt from that fate. So then the practice would be to then imagine our own body on the funeral pyre. Another way that one Kruba Ajahn talked about in terms of the charnel ground practice is imagining our own life or our own past as a charnel ground. It's dead and gone. The past is dead and gone. And we can't really get back to it. We can't revive it. We can't undo it. It's just, that's the way it is. So death is around us, with us, all the time. It is impermanence. That's what the truth of impermanence is pointing to, is pointing to ending, pointing to death. So, but demystifying death. So it's a, this is just indispensable part of the practice. We can't, if we don't do death contemplation, we're only scratching the surface of the practice. We celebrate birth, but we mourn death. You know, Lompo Cha would talk about birth and death as happiness and sadness as well, happiness and suffering. You know, birth is gladness. You know, death is grief, sorrow, or sadness. So we delight in beginnings, and we feel that sense of loss or separation at endings, and yet you can't have one without the other. Yeah. So in that sense, you can say birth is death, birth creates death. Yeah. This is the reflection, the contemplation that the bodhisattva under the Bodhi tree coming to that realization in the contemplation of paticca-samuppada, dependent origination. Without what can there not be death? What's a condition whereby death always happens if that condition is present? Well, birth. If birth happens, the condition of death will come about. It's unavoidable. It can't be any other way. We want it to be some other way. We don't want that. Remember visiting my parents on the Big Island of Hawaii a number of years ago and going into a coffee shop in Kona and seeing a poster on the wall that the first person to live to 1,000 has already been born. So if we find the right gene, the right genetic therapy, then we can live to be 300, 500, 1,000. We still have to die. You can't live forever. What would it be like to be 1,000 years old? I think it'd be awful. So if we demystify death or we just see it as something ordinary, it's not a big deal to grow old and die or to die a sudden death. It's not something unusual. But because we hide from it or we hide it away, we don't really look at it, we don't really contemplate it. Aging too, we should be contemplating aging. Everybody here should be contemplating aging all the time. These daily contemplations. So back to the the idea of the charnel ground, I was mentioning one, Krubhajan talks about it in a slightly different way, and that's that our past is dead and gone. So we, rather than holding on to that or mourning that, wish it would have been some other way, wish I could have done it some other way, then we burn it up. We don't have to try to revive it. So it's gone. So these memories, those memories are like, they're kind of like a charnel ground. So we don't need to revive the past. It's in the Bhadegarata Sutta, let not a person revive the past or on the future place their hopes, but instead looking at the each presently arisen state, not doubting it, but seeing it is just this way. So if we look at these things, like we look at the contemplation of aging, the contemplation of death, contemplation of the body, fragility of the body. So causes of death are many, the causes of continuing of life are few. There's no shortage of diseases or accidents that can happen or whatever. So this contemplation is not to be morose or just to be kind of dragging our feet and kind of saying, well, life sucks and then you die. Like I've actually heard people say that. But so it's not about that, but it's just looking at it, just looking at the reality of this situation that we're in. There's a arising of suffering, but there's also the non-arising of suffering. That's the Dukkha Nirodho. So that's when we really look into these things. How do we let go? How do we let go of the past? How do we not place our hopes on the future? How do we actually do that? And not to overthink it either. Not to overthink it. We can tie ourselves up in knots by overthinking things. So the practice is it's a heart practice. It's not a like a solving an equation. So it's a heart practice, heart-centered practice. Where is the heart clinging? Where does it? How is it able to let go? How can it loosen its grip? That's the very reason the Buddha taught things like death contemplation, charnel ground contemplation, elements contemplation, 32 parts of the body, metta, brahmaviharas. So all the suttas, every paragraph, every verse in the suttas is pointing toward how does the heart kind of loosen its grip. Dana, the benefits of generosity. One of the interesting things about bhikkhu life is that the bhikkhus look after the sick, the Buddha talks about in the Vinaya, looking after each other. So just like the tea time and seeing a monk getting all patched up by his brothers in the holy life, then really delighted in seeing that. I didn't delight that he was all injured and beaten up, but delighted in that. That's what we do as bhikkhus. So, do you need to go to the emergency room? No, I got looked after already. So it's looking after the sick. This is a really very an important practice. You know, we could just say, I've done this a few times in my bhikkhu life, actually looking after sick or injured monks, even to the point of having to bathe them and dress them. There was a monk one time with a broken shoulder and had to bathe him and actually dress him and actually and just look after him in every way. And it's a really good practice, just trying to make somebody else comfortable, trying to look after somebody else. And then if you're the one being looked after, then that can be a practice as well, allowing ourselves to be looked after. It's one of the most special things or special times that you can experience as a monk, is either looking after the sick or being looked after, being sick and being looked after. The story of this is the origin story of the Buddha getting the monks to look after each other. Is there's a monk who's ill, has dysentery, and he's in his kuti. This is very, very ill and has soiled himself. And then the Buddha's with Ananda. He's going on a tour of dwelling places, as he did sometimes, and comes across this one particular dwelling place, and there's a, they see something's not right, so they, in the time of the Buddha, they didn't knock on the door, they, they clear their throat, and they hear this from inside. So then they go in, and there's this monk who's soiled himself, he's very ill, and the Buddha then has Ananda fetch some water, and the Buddha and Ananda clean this monk up themselves with their own hands and take his laundry. They bathe him, they take his sheets, his bed sheets, they give him fresh sheets, give him a fresh garment to wear, and clean him up. And then the Buddha sits down and says, "Well, why isn't there any monks looking after you?" And this monk says, "Oh, well, I don't do anything for the monks, so they don't do anything for me." And so the Buddha says, "Oh, okay." And so that evening, the Buddha calls the monks together in the monastery, gives a Dhamma talk, and he says, "Monks, why wasn't anybody looking after that one sick monk? Did you know he was sick?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, we knew he was sick." Like, "Why was nobody looking after him?" "Well, he doesn't do anything for us, so we don't do anything for him." And the Buddha says, like, don't think like that. And he says, whoever would look after me should look after the sick. It's like you've given up your families, you've given up your mother and father, you're no longer in your homes. All you have is each other. And you have to look after one another. It doesn't matter if somebody doesn't have many duties or doesn't have much work that they're doing for the Sangha. Still, like, that's your duty to look after them. And it's a dukkha, an offense of wrongdoing, to not look after them. So then in the Vinaya, we have all these rules around looking after the sick. Makes it the qualities of an ideal caregiver and the qualities of an ideal receiver of care as well. There's 5 qualities of an ideal caregiver, 5 qualities of an ideal care receiver. And things like they know how to mix the medicine at the proper time, they know how to give medicine at the proper time. So you have a basic knowledge of what's proper and right with medicines. They know when to see if the symptoms are increasing or decreasing. They use kindness and gentleness. And then a care receiver, like, they actually take the medicine they're supposed to take. They're easy to look after. They don't make themselves hard to look after. So it's one of these really, can be one of these really magical, beautiful things that happens, is that, and can have a really good effect on the heart, and in terms of being able to like look after the sick. So there was Longpo Cha, of course, was sick for the last part of his life, and very sick for the last 10 years of his life, and so had to be looked after constantly, having to constantly massage him, clean him up, feed him, look after him in every way. So to have the opportunity to do that is actually quite special, quite a special opportunity. One has to be able to come into contact with unclean things, urine, excrement, sometimes blood, things that are with us all the time, but we normally try to ignore them or push them away, try to make sure that we don't come into contact with them for too long if we don't have to. Make sure we flush them away quickly, get away from these things. But they're in us, they're with us all the time. Just like death is with us all the time. So these are the things that are Dhamma, these are important. These things are with us. In a way, these things are us. We are impermanence. It's not just like, oh, impermanence is some concept that we think of that's outside of ourselves. We are impermanence. We are dukkha. We are not self. So we are these truths apply to us. They're not just concepts that we think about with like a sense of passing curiosity. This body, this mind, this is the truth of impermanence. It's happening all the time. So in the Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta, the first teaching of the Buddha, it's pretty clear that when the Bhikkhu Kondanya sees the Dhamma, then what he sees is anicchang, he sees impermanence, he sees arising Dhammas, passing away Dhammas, and doubt disappears. The Dhamma eye opens, and so that's what's seen is impermanence, and by extension, death, birth and death. That phrase, all that's arising is passing away. The phrase in Pali, if you translate it just literally, it's like, all arising dhammas, ceasing dhammas. So we can look at that a couple different ways, use that as a reflection or a contemplation, that arising and ceasing are almost one and the same, or they are one and the same, they're of the same nature, that one thing arises, that very arising is the ceasing of something else, and the ceasing of something is the arising of something else. So arising dhammas, ceasing dhammas. So one sees, we roll that into one word, anicchang, arising and ceasing. So why do we do this? Why do we even do these practices, these contemplations, these meditations, these different reflections? I was trying to get the heart to loosen the grip on the clinging to things being a certain way. So that's what the dukkha sumudaya, that's the cause of dukkha, or the tanha, the craving, that desire for things to be other than what they are. It's like, yeah, we die, but I don't want it to be that way. Yeah, we suffer, but I don't want it to be that way. Yeah, this happened, but I didn't want it to be that way. So there it is. There's the cause of dukkha. the looking inward rather than outward for the cause of dukkha. It's that sense of responsibility. And with that sense of responsibility comes a sense of empowerment. If we're responsible for the dukkha that we're experiencing, then we're empowered to do something about it. But if it's always outside of ourselves, then that's disempowering us to do something about it. It's the world, it's the politics, it's the leaders, it's the virus, you know, so that disempowers us. That's how we disempower ourselves, and we can't do anything about that. We can complain about it. That's about it. But if we see, wanting things to be some other way, that's the tanha inside, we can do something about that. We can come back to those reflections, those contemplations. So we take that responsibility, and we can really do something about it. We can not just do something about it, we can do everything about it. That's the promise of the Buddha. You know, we can end dukkha. We can end our dukkha. So coming back to that sense of Dhamma, of anicchang, we can't ever fix the world. Looking at the world, that's like going out, flowing out to the world. You know, the nature of the world is dukkha, so we can't go out and fix that. We might have that noble aspiration to end all the suffering in the world. But how can we do that if we can't end our own suffering? Yeah, so we gotta come back in, look at it inside. So that's what we're trying to do. You know, trying to look at everything through the lens of Dhamma, through the lens of anicchang. And say outside of ourselves in the world, even if things get better and they become really good, you know, it's just going to degenerate again. Or even if it's right now going to hell in a handbag, and if it all falls apart, that's not going to last either. It's going to go up again. So this is the anicchang. Clinging to things being a certain way is just leading to suffering. So that's what we try to come back to with the meditation. It's just that sense of, okay, we don't have to overthink it. Breathing in, breathing out. Things are just this way. In this moment, it's another aspect of the practice is trying to develop that sense of gratitude for what we have. That's also very important, and that builds up a very strong sense of connection. Sometimes we might feel a sense of disconnect, and we're seeking like connection. So when we look at the good things we have, that's how we develop gratitude. When we focus on the good, we focus on the good things that have been bestowed upon us, the good things we have, then we develop gratitude. We look at ways that the practice has worked for us, we develop gratitude for the practice. We look at the meals that are cooked for us. We develop gratitude for the gifts that are constantly given to us, this economy of generosity that we have in the monastery. That sense of a debt of gratitude. And the Buddha said that we repay that debt through the practice. When we get given gifts to sustain the holy life, we get given gifts to sustain the practice, we repay that debt by actually doing the practice, by doing what those gifts were given for, doing the practice. Those are a few reflections coming up for this evening. I'll leave it there.